Israel, both Israelis and Palestinians who are operating within Israeli civil society in order to stop it now.
As we reported in headlines just yesterday on Monday in the occupied West Bank, an Israeli settler shot and killed the Palestinian activist and teacher, 31-year-old Olda Mohammed Hadaleen, who played a key role in the production of the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land. Residents identified his killer as Yinon Levy, an Israeli settler who was sanctioned by the Biden administration. The Trump administration lifted those sanctions. There's videos showing him firing a gun. Talk about the significance of this and the violence in the West Bank as well. We just have 30 seconds.
Yes, absolutely. I think, first of all, so I think this is just a clear example of how exposed Palestinian lives are under Israeli occupation and apartheid, both in the West Bank and certainly in Gaza. The lack of any consequences, we expect Yinon Levy to not have to pay a significant price, is the result of policy, and it's also the result of international inaction. And it is so symbolic that the Trump administration essentially lifted the sanctions, the very meager sanctions that were imposed by the Biden administration on this individual, but it's an entire system of impunity and support for this settler terror that has been responsible and that we see as responsible for the killing of dear Ode Hadaleen, who was really a friend to us all. Anyone who was active in the Masafer Yatta area knew Ode, stayed with him, spent time with him, and listened to him. He was an inspiring
and
amazing activist.
Sadiq Mikhaeli, we're going to have to leave it there. I thank you for being with us with the Israeli Human Rights Group. Salam.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Higher Reasoning Reggae every Sunday morning at 3 a.m. Higher Reasoning Reggae is dedicated to bringing international reggae word and sound power to the massive airing early Sunday mornings at 3 a.m. only on KBOO Portland.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's a little after 8 a.m. on a Tuesday morning. It's time for Too Much Information with your one singular host, Tracy Simmons. Do stay tuned.
Good morning, and welcome to Too Much Information on KBOO Radio. I am Tracy Simmons. I am here by myself this morning as Abe is away enjoying a little vacation, hopefully. But yeah, y'all know when I'm here by myself, please don't just leave me alone. Today, I will be talking about this concept that they are referring to this mass deportation effort as Juan Crow. So if you think back to, after slavery, basically the Reconstruction, Jim Crow was the law of the land, checking out black people, making sure they had their papers, enforcing fear tactics. Of course, this came along with the rise of the Ku Klux Klan, and terrorized black communities that were now free. And so, history repeats until we stop it from repeating. But this framing of this new way of enforcing fear and carceral tactics on Hispanic populations, of course, in the United States, immigrant populations, refugee populations, and this idea that what's happening isn't new. It just looks a little different. I have a really good friend in LA who has been on the front lines of this situation, not just under Trump, but for many years, fighting for the rights of immigrants. And she is really fearful now, expressing concerns that people are literally being spirited away. kidnapped off the streets. Families don't know what's happened to their loved ones. Being detained, having to prove either that they are citizens of the United States or they are legally here, or never to be heard from again. And so this is a ripple effect of fear on a level that I don't think that we've seen. Of course, ICE has been around since its inception and was harming people from the beginning. But what we're seeing with the Trump administration is this whole thing on steroids. And so today's conversation and question to the audience members is, are you seeing people missing? What is happening in communities that you are closest to as far as how are they operating? What does that look like every day? And how do we stand up, stand in the gap for folks who are right now, their human rights are at question. Their ability to exist is in question. So 503-231-8187 is the number to call. So I'm jumping off this conversation with an article, and it's an opinion essay in the New York Times from Soraya Nadia McDonald. And, you know, she's really talking about how to name what's happening right now. Juan Crow, right? This ideology, this, you know, cultural moment we're in where people who are not criminals, who are law-abiding non-citizens in many cases, who are here to try and make a better life for themselves and their family, who are hardworking, who pay into the United States tax system, who get very little out of it, who do not get public benefits, although the anti-immigrant narrative has, you know, really shifted that. We are, you know, in a interesting time of propaganda, and I've said it before, right, the stage of fascism and genocide that we're at allows for the propaganda. And we've got politicians glomming on to that, referring to people as inner city rats. We know what that means. Florida governor is waxing poetic about the alligator Alcatraz, a prison that literally was built in weeks with millions of dollars. Hey, you can do that, but you can't build any housing for people? Come on. And so we're in this interesting space of how do we, one, stand up for human rights, but continue to push back on the various narratives that paint immigrants and refugees and non-citizens as somehow the enemy of the people, right? Like, this is baked in white supremacy. This is not new, right? This is America. And so what is our responsibility to take care of our community members? What is our ability to push back on these narratives? And ultimately, what will become of us as a nation if we allow this to just continue? And I'm always asking that, because as a radio person and a worker and an activist, I can't do it by myself, right? What is our collective will to begin pushing upon this ugly, ugly time in our history and change the realities that we're existing in? So, you know, when we talk about Jim Crow, it's that kind of whole body of laws, right? It butts up against vagrancy laws, right? So people were enslaved, they became free. They won their freedom. They stole their freedom in many cases, thinking about Juneteenth that just passed not that long ago. And once they became free, they were given nothing, right? The clothes on their back were theirs, maybe, you know, some food as they were leaving the plantation, very few actual personal belongings that they had. But they didn't have work. And so as people were, you know, hanging out, loitering, right, then all of these laws became real. You could no longer just be in public space. And, right, we'll talk about how this matrix harms unsheltered people. It harms people of all kinds, right? But could no longer be in public without something to do, had to be working. If you weren't working, you could get scooped up, put on a chain gang, and forced to work now because you're in the criminal system, right? This, you know, whole system, right, harmed Black people, but it exacerbated itself to low-income people. Of course, vagrancy laws harm mostly at this point unsheltered people, and we know that the built environment was created for harshness towards people who didn't have a place to go and sleep, right? If you think about park benches and the way that they're designed and built, neither here nor there. At this point in our society, right, these policies around show me your papers, you have to be able to prove that you're a U.S. citizen. If you're not a U.S. citizen, we're scooping you up off the street and we're taking you somewhere, right? We've talked about on this program the idea of bringing a person from the United States to El Salvador when El Salvador is not their nation of birth. Even the conversations about Liberia and Libya and where, you know, places very far away. So now you are being taken out of your community, put in some kind of prison facility somewhere else, and that has ripple impacts on that community, right? The fear, the missing an actual human that was your father or your mother or your sister or your sibling, that has really bad impacts on society for the long haul. And I think about, you know, the connection between this moment that we're in and even the crime bill and, you know, Measure 11 in Oregon and three strikes you're out laws, and how the stealing of people from society had terrible impacts on the communities those people were stolen from. Right now we're still reeling from you know, the moment in time where, you know, we went from having, you know, 1 million people in prison to 3 and 4 million people in prison, and the impacts on the families, the impacts on, you know, the family unit as a whole when people are being spirited away. And so, like, who's having this conversation? Who's ready to jump in? Who's ready to, like, do something? Because Trump has a quota. The ICE right now has a quota of people. They want to get... They're interested in the numbers. How many people can they actually steal away from our society? And I'm so frustrated because not enough people are angry. Not enough people are ready to flip the dang table. So I'm going to pause there. I've got Santiago on the line. Definitely want to hear from Santiago. If you are interested in giving your voice to this conversation, please call 503-231-8187. Santiago, good morning.
Good morning, Tracy. How are you this morning?
I'm doing all right. My voice is kind of crunchy.
Yeah.
I'm feeling a little sick.
Yeah. You know, I've had a couple friends. I've had a couple friends get spirited away. Luckily, they're both safe now. One of them was picked up at a Home Depot in Cali. The other one ended up in the hospital, but she's okay.
My gosh.
Yeah. So they're both home safe right now. Yeah. I mean, it's real. It's always been real, especially when it comes to Latinos, Chicanos, like, you know, it's always been real. It's a very real part of our community, has been for a long time. It's just on the front burner right now. But I think, you know, to tell people what to do in the interim, you know, putting a call out to my white people, your body and your voice are key, because at the end of the day, they claim that they're doing this for you. They may not say it outright, they may not express it explicitly, but what they want is they want to go back to a system where white skin and white voices are privileged. I have a colleague who does an outdoor school for my daughter, and her kids, both of her white children, go to a Spanish immersion school. And she has put her body on the line in front of ICE agents and basically been a Karen, but for, like, social justice. So,
yes.
And they won't mess with her because they don't mess with her as much. But, yeah, understand that, you know, I always tell, you know, there's a quote that says, you know, racism won't be solved until white people understand that they don't, that they don't, it's not about empathizing with it's not about empathizing with non-white people, but it's about, coming to grips with your white history. So that is one thing you can do. Another thing is help distribute pamphlets that talk about, the rights of people in the face of ICE and especially law enforcement in general. Granted, law enforcement doesn't mean a whole lot because they, whether you're talking about ICE or you're talking about the police, they work for the benefit of the 1%. But they still have a few rules that they should adhere to. So spreading information about people's rights is always really important. But I think in the greater scheme of things, if we really want to make a change, we have to stop looking at the system being broken and understanding it as functioning as it was intended. This country has always been hostile to non-white people. It does not want us here, save for our labor and our complicity with capitalism and empire, and our status and our ability to breathe freely has always been contingent on our complicity with capitalism and empire. So if we really want to talk about making the change, we have to understand that, we're going to need revolution at this point. And it doesn't have to be violent, but the oppressor is who makes it violent at the end of the day. The resistance of the oppressed always matches the output of the oppressor. So, Fidel Castro once quoted that they tried to use every form of peaceful means to resist, but it was the state that ultimately forced them to be violent. It's not a joke. And people will say, the fact that we're one of the only Western countries that has not fundamentally changed its constitution since its founding. Multiple other places have revised their constitution in fundamental ways, even if they're kind of going down the crapper in terms of democracy. They have effectively tried and redone certain portions of it. So the fact that we have an administration that's trying to do a plain reading that doesn't attempt to even excavate anything out of the text, it should be pretty telling, because the text on its own doesn't really give anybody rights aside from people who own land or own property or own people for that matter. We've been trying to amend this constitution for a few hundred years, and it's basically a garment that doesn't fit anyone except cishet Christian white men, and we have to stop pretending that it's for anybody else except for them. Those are things that you can think about. Like I said, join your local communist socialist organization. Get your political education from people who aren't affiliated even ostensibly with the Democratic Party, because at the end of the day, they're trying to funnel all this revolutionary fervor back into voting. And while voting is an important part of the place that we live in, it's not the only part. But that's what they want you to believe. So those are things that I would say are really important to think about in this moment.
So I have a quick question before you jump off. Right now, right, of course, I'm always going to show up as an anti-capitalist, but unfortunately, I have to eat and survive, and so I have to play the capitalism game. Where do you see the tension with that? How as a society do we turn away from capitalism, which is the root of all evil, right? It's the root of slavery, it's the root of land theft, it's the root of genocide, it's the root of literally all evil. How do we turn away from capitalism when we all have to play the game to just exist?
That's the same way the capitalists turn away from feudalism. It was a gradual process. I mean, honestly, in the short term, there are a few things, you can get involved with, organizations that help aid organizations, I'm trying to think of the word, it's not coming to me. Mutual aid organizations. You can get involved in mutual aid organizations, people that currently in the moment don't have a capitalist principle. But at the end of the day, we're fighting against 500 years of this indoctrination at the very least. And so there's the changes that we really need are just, it's going to, unfortunately, it's like trying to plant trees in the middle of a forest fire. You know, there has to be a patience that comes with it. I mean, it took several hundred years for capitalism to supplant feudalism, you know, and the first few tries didn't take, you know, they won. You know, we have to stop thinking about, I mean, short-term victories are great, but the ultimate change doesn't come from short-term victories. I mean, look at civil rights with this very small handful of quasi victories that it gave non-white folks. It wasn't a sure victory. It was a constant striking. You know, we gotta keep hitting at it even when it seems hopeless, because ultimately we're trying to think about short term wins over like the long term change those two things don't jive, because what we're looking for isn't going to come in the short term. You know, it's going to take education, it's got to take realignment. Like I said, these capitalists will have you believe that people just thought that it was a better idea, but, you know, people didn't understand for hundreds of years how society could function without divine ordinance from king, you know, and now we understand how it can. And so now we have capitalists saying, well, how are you going to function in a system where you don't have people at the top with money telling you what to do? And it's going to happen. You know, the rule of kings is gone. The rule of capitalism will die eventually. It's dying a slow death, but it's dying. But it's going to take more. We got to be willing to break from it and recognize it's not going to be an overnight thing. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for calling. I always appreciate dialoguing with you. Keep up the good work. Well, so there are different organizations looking and creating heat maps in their communities. So when there is an ICE raid, that the neighborhoods can be alerted of that. I'm trying to tip off folks before ICE arrives there. And this is requiring some insider information and some surveillance of ICE themselves. And, you know, I'm like, what would it be like if we had a nationwide network of like underground folks who were doing this, right? Like showing up where ICE is before ICE could get our community members, like showing up and putting our bodies on the line. Since June, there have been 471 confirmed operations focused predominantly on specific neighborhoods, people of color and Latinos, places where immigrant communities and refugee communities exist. So we just know they're not targeting individuals. They're targeting neighborhoods, and they're profiling people based on their racial identity and their phenotype, what they look like. I know that in places like Atlanta and LA, there are networks forming, and just wondering, you know, how do we help fund these kinds of activities? What's interesting, too, is we are not hearing from the federal government how many people are dying from ICE raids, from ICE interventions and what they are doing. But there's a growing number of people who are dying in ICE custody, a growing number of people who are dying during these brutal raids that are literally taking people's lives. And you know, everyone is being framed as somehow illegal, right? This idea that a person can be illegal, this idea that borders are real things, although we decided where they are and we made them up after we stole people's land, right? Like the whole concept of it is crazy making to a certain degree, but here we are, right? And so I know at some organizations they're creating these red cards, reminding folks of what to do should ICE come in contact with you. Like, you don't open your door. Make sure that you remain silent. Do not give them additional information for which to harm you with. Don't sign anything, and don't give them any of your actual documents. If you are trying to prove who you are, do not hand that to ICE, because we don't trust them, right? Like, they are not trustworthy individuals. Right now, the Trump administration is also trying to skyrocket the number of ICE people on the ground as well. And so
how do we work in our communities to deter people from seeking out those opportunities? And I say opportunities with air quotes because it does come with money, right? Once again, we get back to capitalism and how capitalism drives people's behavior. And if you get a nice shiny job with ICE making $80,000 to start, right, that's going to seem attractive to some people. How do we make that less attractive for folks in our communities? Absolutely not. That is not a good job. That is not what you want to be doing. That is actually harming our community writ large. So once again, right, there's this part of like the action and direct action, and then there's the narrative, right? How do we continually shift the narrative about what's happening? Let me go see if there's a... I encourage you, if you want to jump in the conversation, to call 503-231-8187, because I don't want to be talking to myself for the next 45 minutes. Interesting enough, you know, with the current mode and with Tom Homan as the person over ICE who is, it feels like he probably gets like excited by this current effort under ICE. He seems like he really likes the harm and fear and feeds off of it, right? How do we also shift the narrative that these are evil people among us, right? We're focusing on people who are trying to live their lives, trying to survive in a society where we've made it harder and harder, especially for people of moderate income and lower income to actually exist, right? We are seeing the Trump administration strip away people's food supports, educational resources, you know, gutting the Department of Education. We've got this whole, you know, environment over on the side talking about Epstein and child molestation and pedophilia and rape of women, right? Like all of that is happening, and we're focused on people just trying to exist in the world. What is the narrative change that needs to happen there as well? Because to paint a whole group of people as illegal, as criminals, as rats, whatever we're using, right? Those are the dehumanization terms that are being used. How is this happening? The same people who are saying that about really very innocent people who are just trying to survive, but we know they have their hand in something really, really dark. How do we shift the narrative there around, no, guess what? These are not even the real bad people. The bad actors are y'all, the people who are doing these terrible things. are connected to some really dark stuff. And we know that Trump's name is in those Epstein files a million times, yet he continues to shift the blame, deny, and then focus on very much innocent people who are just trying to live as the real bad people. We've got to shift the narrative there, too. Sharon's on the line. Sharon, good morning. Sharon, are you there?
I have called my local legislators about, and I think it would be very helpful is to, and I know there's a movement other places also, to not allow ICE to cover their faces, and so that people who are doing these jobs will be exposed. They cannot hide, and they have to identify themselves, and they can be photographed, they can be identified. You know, not only is it right for people who are being questioned or apprehended to know who's doing it, but also so that the people who are doing it have to take some responsibility for their actions just by being visible. I've called. I don't know about any actions that are pending right now, and I just wanted to know thoughts on that subject.
Thank you. Yeah, show their faces. And what's interesting is that I think ICE might be one of the only organization that oftentimes is not they're plain clothes, right? So not in uniform often. Oftentimes are not in marked cars. So just showing up in the community in ways that's very clandestine and actually scary, right? If the police came to your door and you could not identify them as the police, that sets in another layer of fear. There was a situation in Nebraska where ICE raided an organization, and they had a lot of undocumented folks working there. And now that organization is likely going to close because they don't have the workforce to continue operations, right? Like, the infrastructure will be changed by this continued effort to spirit people away out of society. And no one's really talking about it. I think at the outset of the conversation, when we were still talking about Project 2025, I was asking questions like, well, who's going to make sure that the food supply continues to churn along, right? Because unfortunately, we know that food suppliers have been exploiting undocumented workers for decades. I mean, this is like, this goes back to like the Vaqueros program in the 1950s and probably way beyond that, where we, you know, brought people who were undocumented to the country for the purpose of paying them peanuts to harvest food for the American population, and, you know, gave them very little, you know, no resources, no benefits, exploited their labor, and then when we had enough of them, sent them back or told them they had to go back. So here we are with a food supply that is reliant on the exploitation of migrant labor, and no one's really talking about that either. What will that mean over time as you have this, you know, ICE crackdowns and raids, people, you know, leaving or being forced to either leave the country or taken out of the country, right? Because there's still the conversation about how people can and should self-deport, whatever that means. Of course, that costs money. People have been exploited. They don't have money. It really is frustrating to think that there are people who, because of the fear, are going to self-deport. Where are they going? How are they getting there? All of those questions right now with things like real ID and, like, you can't just hop on a plane if you are an undocumented person and feel safe. So the idea that people can even self-deport is also a false narrative. But really, this is how people like Trump and his administration say, oh, well, we're not really the bad guys. We're offering these people to leave the country on their own. Yeah, okay. Can they? Is that a real thing? And the reality it isn't. What is interesting, most recently, there is a man in Portland, Oregon that was arrested for assaulting, quote unquote, assaulting an ICE officer, and that person is being detained. And, you know, we have to wonder what comes of that, because this also sets up the fear for people putting their bodies on the line. So Robert Jacob Hopes was arrested more than a month after the June 14th protest, and seems like he is still in custody for assaulting an ICE officer. Once again, right, at some point, we will have to have more than one or two people standing in the gap. It will have to be all of us, and this is where I'm consistently trying to encourage folks to figure out where they can take action, where is their kind of place to stand in the gap, and what might that look like for us collectively. Kind of going back to what Santiago was saying, right? Like, the revolution is right now. We don't have time. And I continue to say that history repeats, right? We're talking about Juan Crow right now. We were talking about Jim Crow. Eventually, there will be none of us safe. And so this is where, you know, I get back to that poem, you know, First They Came For. It's a short poem. And we're at the end of it. We're very close. Like it's like, wake up, people. We're in a really scary time, and I think we've got a media that generally is normalizing this, that is also participating in the narrative that people who are here without documentation are somehow bad people. They are illegal. They are criminals. They are all of these terrible things that they're being called, which is not true. I had an interesting conversation with a friend of mine who, you know, has different views. I think it's good to have friends with different views, but was really trying to convince me that immigrant communities are communities where there is more crime. And all data show that that is not true. It's absolutely false. It is a propaganda that has taken hold for a lot of people. They believe it. The reality is that in communities where there are large numbers of immigrants, refugees, and undocumented people, crime goes down. Those people are not committing crime. They are just trying to survive. They're trying to live. When you look at a community that has a lot of native-born Americans, you'll see more crime. We continue to scapegoat people without enough information, with misinformation and disinformation, when we should really be thinking about that narrative as well. How do we shift and reframe the narrative? Because it's absolutely false. And a lot of people who, you know, engage in commercial media and Fox News and some of the others are really getting bad information, Sonia says, people with different views on whether certain people are actually human cannot be my friends. What's interesting about this particular friend is she is Mexican. Born in the United States, but I think what has been done in our society is people get turned against each other. And this happens in Black communities all the time, where you'll have a Black person who says, you know, well, that young boy should just pull up their pants and just comply, or they said that you should cut your hair, just cut your hair so you can play sports, right? People get turned against each other in the same communities over and over again. And so for me, I'm not turning my back on my friend who has some really interesting views. What I will do is enter into the conversation and share data. Hey, girl, you're wrong. This is crazy. And we get to the point where we're like, okay, known this person since I was 13 years old. So it's not about, you know, right or wrong. It's about, hey, to turn away from the conversation is to leave that person in a vacuum of bad information, and I don't participate in that. I do participate in what Loretta Ross talks about as, like, trying to meet people where they are. Right now we are so polarized as a society. It's because people have said, yeah, that uncle, he's nuts, and I'm not talking to him anymore. And so now the uncle is in a vacuum of just, you know, Fox News and nonsense. And now you don't have a communication with them. You don't have the ability to pull them back from the ledge at all, because you've cut off all communication. I recognize that that is a strategy for some folks, but it just leads to further and further isolation of those people. I was engaging with an interesting TED talk a few weeks ago where a man was talking about leaving a white supremacist organization and a white supremacist frame of mind. And what he said that was very profound to me was, in his thinking about himself in white supremacy, he was looking for connection with other people. And so what was really, he was being starved of to connect him with other people who put white people at the center of the universe, right, and made him feel good about himself, was connection from other people. And so he said, what we must do in society, if we are to become more compassionate and empathetic and more caring, especially for people who have less and need more, is that we have to extend compassion to the people who we don't want to sometimes. And so this is also kind of the framework that I'm trying to work from, trying to exist in, that when someone has a really crummy view of the world, that does not mean that they're a terrible human. Sometimes it does, But sometimes it means they are really, really hurting and needing something that you might be able to provide in a caring voice, lending an ear. I'm not sure. Okay, so going back to ICE raids, this will continue to ramp up. And as ICE continues to, move forward with its operations, we will also see more communities coming together. And what's interesting here is that is a threat. As Santiago was saying, as white people specifically show up and put their bodies on the line, it feels different. We know that the Democratic members of Congress have been doing their, part, I guess, staging a sit-in at an ICE facility most recently, showing up to these spaces and demanding to know what's happening to people. The interesting thing, too, is there's a little bit of misinformation that's actually even happening with ICE, that ICE officers might not know of the harm that they're doing within their area. So it could be happening over here, and it's not being shared with other people. So I think it's really important that, one, the ICE officers are also part of our communities. How do we get to know them? How do we get to figure out who they are? I remember Sharon talking about, exposing people's faces, taking pictures of them. Who are these people? I think we've got to figure out so that we can begin to, checking in on people. ICE right now has access to Medicaid records and criminalizing homelessness and mental illness. So once again, right, this is not just about undocumented people. It will continue to kind of balloon out bigger and bigger and bigger and gather more and more people. And that's why, for me, it makes a ton of sense to, kind of stand in the gap right now. It's not about other people so much as it's about all of us. I have a list of people that have been killed by ICE. That list continues to grow and should be publicized. I'm not going to say the names on air, but it is available. If anybody's interested in it, please contact me. I will share it with you. But we also have to say, this is fascism. This is genocide. This is not okay. It's not acceptable in our society. In a very quote-unquote civilized society, this should not be acceptable. And I don't know who it is acceptable to, but I don't know those people. But we really should be stepping into the space to say absolutely not on our watch. Please give me a call at 503-231-8187 if you have ideas about how to interrupt, how to jump in. We've got Robin on the line. Robin, good morning.
Hello?
Hi, Robin. Good morning.
Hi. Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Hello? Okay. Hello?
If you turn down, yes, you got to turn down your radio if you're having a hard time hearing.
I thought you couldn't hear me. Okay, I have been going down to the ICE intake center on McAdam and Bancroft.
Yeah.
And I am a 78-year-old white woman. We need more people like that down there. They're trying to keep protesters at the site 24/7. And I go down whenever I can just to make sure people can get away for a while and have a shower or whatever. It's kind of a scary place. But my first sign that I took down on one side said, "Does your mother know what you are?" And on the other side it said, "Your mom must be so proud." And I've gone through variations of listing my family and my husband's family. We represent 12 countries, 5 continents. Not one of the continents in our DNA happens to be North America.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm.
So we're from every place but here. And I actually, at one point, had a job fair a couple Mondays ago. I have two posters of all kinds of jobs that people can have that aren't ICE, that are decent and honest. And so I'm kind of focused on those people and just trying to get them to think about what they're doing. I say to them, at night, when you close your eyes, you're in your head alone. Think about also, actually, I should tell you this because I love it. In my job fair spiel, I told about my dad and the jokes that we have about the job that my dad did. He was a garbage man. And one of our jokes was, how's business here? It stinks. Or satisfaction guaranteed, twice your garbage back. And then I said, in the summer, sometimes we got to go on the truck with my dad. So what do you joke about with your kids and your job?
Oh.
And what are you going to do on take your kid to work day? So anyway, that's my focus, is the ICE people.
Thank you, Robin. Oof. Yeah, some good strategies. And this is what I'm talking about. These are humans, right? They have been made to believe that what they're doing is a righteous thing. But we need moms and grandmas and aunties and uncles and dads to be questioning, like, hey, do you really feel good about this? When you go home at night, do you feel good about what you're doing? Can you possibly feel like you are righteous in this moment? And how? How? How does this happen? Right? And I think back to going back to the Jim Crow conversation, right? There were people who were Christians who showed up to lynchings with their families, right? At some point, as a human family, we have to say, how is that possible? How do you reconcile what you're doing to other humans on a daily basis? I think that kind of pressure absolutely helps people move away from these kinds of organizations. I'm sure there is a deep programming of people who work at ICE for them to believe that what they're doing is the right and the righteous thing. But I can't imagine that they, when things get quiet and it's just them and their thoughts, that they think that they're doing a really good thing. Families crying, people being harmed, people dying, people being snatched from their families, children being caught up in these ICE raids. I can't imagine that someone could, with a good conscience, really believe that they are doing God's work. Right, asking those questions, showing up. Once again, Robin said it, that ICE facility is on McAdam. If you're interested, I think we're onto something, keeping up a 24/7 presence there as the community, saying, we don't want you in our community. We don't like this. This is not okay. This is not what our community believes in or needs. Ram is on the line as well. Ram, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you for your show. It's easy, I think, to blame individually the ICE workers, to demonize what they're doing and to see them as obviously the people who are kidnapping people off the streets with no legal process, be they bounty hunters or actual government employees, I don't know. But the thing is what I wanted to say was, it's more than that. We have to look at, I believe, our own accomplishment or complicity with this in as far as AI and using Facebook, participating in AI, that has been building data centers, using information that they've gathered from social media to track people, to locate them, is all part of it. So I think that on the left, in particular, it's people will say, oh, well, they're ICE is bad and, you know, Trump is bad. And of course, that's true. But we're feeding them with our information. We're feeding them by participating in social media, in Facebook and Google and all these things that are building then data centers to mine information, to store, to use, absolutely to mine minerals from the earth as well, to take away water, fresh water that they have to use for their databases, which consume huge amounts of energy, which is, you know, fossil fuels in black and brown communities. It's another genocide that's happening. It's another form of slavery that's going on. And yeah, it's convenient. It's hella convenient to use these systems and to just fall into the patterns that are designed so that we fall into. But they also have an effect, and that can be in Gaza, and that is on our immigrant communities and our, you know, people who are protesting the genocide happening in Gaza. And it's all because we're contributing to it. Slavery was probably very convenient too. People didn't want to give that up.
Were you finished, Rum?
This is something that I think we need to look at.
I don't know what happened. But we lost, I think, maybe Rum, or maybe she was finished. I absolutely agree with it. We continue to participate in systems, and I think this goes back to that conversation about revolution and anti-capitalism. Also, right, our media, current media landscape is owned by these people who are supporting Trump, and our participation continues to give them information and resources. Absolutely. And so what do we do with that? We turn away from it, or we use it in ways to build community capacity for fighting back. That's another way we could use it. Dave is on the line. Dave, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. And I just would love to boost both of the previous callers and what you're saying. Yeah, I think definitely getting down to, if you're here in Portland, Oregon, get down to ice on McAdam down there, South Waterfront.
We have a little bit there. Don't
let fear get to you, you know. And I just want to check in real quick. You can hear me okay?
We hear you fine, Dave. Keep going.
Okay, great. And yeah, so I want to boost Robin on that. Get down there. Bring your, you know, don't let fear get in the way of doing that. I also agree. Disconnect from the institutions or consumer situations, whatever they are, that are actually working against you. And we have to do this collectively, but as individuals, it does start with us. So, you know, like she said, that your previous caller said, get out of the social media, the internet, by and large, and there's still good stuff out there, but like, yeah, places like Facebook, Instagram, even TikTok, which is now being sold to American companies, these are not healthy places for people, and they are working against our interests. That, you know, we need real life places to meet. KBOO, awesome. You know, everybody's listening now should be a member of KBOO, and to support these kind of shows where we can talk about this stuff and not have it influenced by advertising dollars. Disconnect from the places that are for commercial, for profit, and against human beings. So I really appreciate what you're doing, and I just encourage, yeah, people build community, also take responsibility for how you live your life and how you spend your money and where you spend your time. Stop doom scrolling, turn on KBOO, meet your neighbors, you know, build community. So thank you for taking my call, and I really appreciate your show.
Thank you so much, Dave, for your call. And we are having some, well, we're having another visit from our good old friend, the Technical Weirdness. I'm going to try to get Tracy back on the line in a manner that allows her to hear y'all. In the meantime, please enjoy this.
That it is going to be unseasonably hot. We're getting into the August month and the end of summer where it gets really hot in the Portland metro area. There is a heat wave across the country, and so always think about our unsheltered neighbors and community members, as well as the plants and animals, and what you can do to prevent forest fires. We want to make sure that we keep Oregon green. So if you have the ability to water in the morning, water late at night, put some water out, check on your neighbors, make sure folks have what they need to be able to survive in these moments, please do so. Also know that if you would like to help us avoid some of these technical difficulties, we need money. And you can donate to KBOO. Go online to kboo.fm or is it org, and click the donate button. If you're interested in hearing more of what you're hearing on our programs, we would love your support. We need your support. In a moment like this, commercial media continues to tell us what they want us to hear, and we have to rely on community media and ways of learning information and engaging with information outside of that environment that has been built through the capitalist system. This is, of course, commercial-free radio, community-developed radio, and we really need your support in these moments. Trump and the administration are currently trying to defund NPR, trying to defund PBS. They're mad at Elmo. I mean, come on now. So we need your support. We appreciate your support. Please continue to join us for future conversations. Abe is out, but he will be back with me next week, and we'd love to have you and share a moment of community with you. So I will sign out for now, and wish you a happy Tuesday. And we'll be back next week with Too Much Information here on KBOO 90.7 Portland. Thank you.
This is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stump